You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning, and welcome to West Hill United Church, where we call ourselves by various names, such as Christian, post-Christian, progressive Christian, or even secular Christian. But most of us here at West Hill recognize that the Christian community did not come into being because of voices from the heavens, but because the son of a carpenter asked a lot of questions when he was 12, proclaimed disturbing messages to the people of Capernaum as a young man, and dared to heal the sick on the Sabbath before he was finally executed for disturbing the existing orthodoxy. Love remained at the core of his message, expressing itself in the acceptance of otherwise ostracized Samaritans, and it remains a challenge for us as we summon the courage to talk with the many others who find our beliefs and practices so different from what has seemed traditional. We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations.
Grounded, Guided, Growing, A Time for Centering, from Scott Kearns.
When we talk about being grounded, not in a book or a person, but in life itself, and then choosing to live that life as lovingly as possible, and needing lots of wisdom to do that, so growing. I had an ECG the other day, and evidently my physical heart is fine, and I wanted to show you what there. That's not actually me, but that is life. If that's happening on you, you're alive. You're in this life. Eyes wide open, ears wide open. We are in this interconnected life together. Whatever else someone believes or doesn't, that's a fact. We're alive in this interconnected life. And I'm moving to the next slide, which is our third idea of growing in wisdom. That's a brainwave. That is a brainwave. That's what happens when you're thinking. And that's what we do together. We think and we challenge. I do not see the world the same way I did 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, yesterday, because we keep growing together. And the reason for doing that is so that our heart ECG printout looks like this. That's mine. I asked the doctor for it. That's what, no. I found that and I thought that's how we want to live this life. If we're alive, we want to live it justly and compassionately and with integrity.
Laura Chase drives off a bridge in a small town in Ontario about 80 years ago, leaving her sister, Iris, to sort out the cause of her suicide in Margaret Atwood's novel, Blind Assassin. The mystery remains, along with the self-doubt expressed in the following reading. How could I have been so ignorant, she thinks, so stupid, so unseeing, so given over to carelessness? But without such ignorance, such carelessness, how could we live? If you knew what was going to happen, if you knew everything that was going to happen next, if you knew in advance the consequences of your own actions, you'd be doomed. You'd be as ruined as God. You'd be a stone. You'd never eat or drink or laugh or get out of bed in the morning. You'd never love anyone ever again. You'd never dare to. Marcel Proust may take us from self-doubt to self-confidence in this reading from his 3,000-page masterpiece, In Search of Lost Time, and I confess I've never read it. It's on the agenda. Every reader finds himself. The writer's work is merely a kind of optical instrument that makes it possible for the reader to discern what, without this book, he would perhaps never have seen in himself. Offered his wisdom for the journey.
Thank you, Don.
Focused Moments from Greta Vosper.
The focused moment this morning, and many of you may have noticed that you didn't have an announcement bulletin. Annie was so engaged with the Carrera family this week that I said to her, don't bother with the bulletin. So hopefully you paid attention to some of the announcements. And I will remind you that again on Wednesday we're meeting in our Indulgent series. And last week we talked about property. It was an engaging conversation and some great ideas came out of that. And this week we're talking about stewardship. So you'll see in the lobby there are some pictures of church doors, which are examples of stewardship posters that were collaborated on between the Stewardship Services part of the United Church of Canada and the Observer. So take a look at them. They're a very interesting perspective on what people might find behind the doors of a church. So that's Wednesday at 7 o'clock, if you can join us for that conversation. So this is our first week of our Hollywood series, inspired by Hollywood, where we look at films that have been nominated for Best Picture. And we've done this, I think, since 2009 or 2010. But this year we decided to look at it a little differently. And rather than looking at the films that have been nominated for this year's Academy Awards as Best Picture, we decided to go back and look at some of the pictures that were nominated in the past that didn't get the award. So we've got five movies, because we'll have to choose another one with Aruna's choice not coming on the 4th of March. And I would encourage you to watch them. The one coming up next week is Reds. Just a forewarning, it's a three-hour movie. Totally worth it. So take a big chunk of your week and watch the film in preparation for next Sunday's exploration. So, the focus moment is really about film and the art of film. When art sets up its pretty shadows, or long, or deep, or over dark, we lull ourselves to other worlds, where problems we have never known stalk those whose lives are but a shimmer cast upon a silvery screen. Their problems are not ours. Their loves extreme, their worries large, their dramas but the work of furrowed brows whose struggles sought to entertain. Is this the truth? Have we been ever able to see the full complexity of life without the poet's vast perspective, discerning truth of our varying lies, each told to turn our eye away from the cold camera stare, that we might survive our sorry tales and live to tell the more?
The vocal ensemble is going to teach us a song, and it was written by the pastor of Southminster Steinhauer in Edmonton, Christopher New, who I've met twice and email lots and call friend. He has the same requirement for the music he writes than I do and we do here, is that the song can be taken to a public school or a public meeting anywhere and sung as is, and hopefully will speak to the values of everyone in that room. This is the theme of the service was insight, and this song links with what David was talking about what more insight does into a difficult situation. The song is called Reconciling Ways.
Peter is going to play us the trailer.
Be melodramatic.
Look down there. Would you really feel any pity if one of those dots stopped moving forever? If I offered you £20,000 for every dot that stopped, would you really, old man, tell me to keep my money? Or would you calculate how many dots you could afford to spend? Free of income tax, old man. Free of income tax. Oh, well, you can save money now, dude.
A lot of good your money will do you in jail.
That jail's in another zone. There's no proof against me. Besides you.
I should be pretty easy to get rid of.
Pretty easy?
Wouldn't be too sure.
I carry a gun. Don't think they'd look for a bullet wound after you hit that ground.
Dug up your coffin.
Found Harvard? Pity.
Holly, what fools we are talking to each other this way, as though I'd do anything to you, or you to me. You're just a little mixed up about things in general. Nobody thinks in terms of human beings. Governments don't. Why should we? They talk about the people and the proletariat. I talk about the suckers and the mugs. It's the same thing. They have their 5-year plans. So have I.
Used to believe in God.
Well, I still do believe in God, only. I believe in God and mercy and all that, but the dead are happier dead. They don't miss much here, poor devils. What do you believe in?
Oh, if you ever get Anna out of this mess, be kind to her. If you find she's worth it.
I wish I'd asked you to bring me some of these tablets from home.
Holly, I'd like to cut you in, old man. There's nobody left in Vienna I can really trust, and we've always done everything together. When you make up your mind, send me a message. I'll meet you any place, any time. And when we do meet, old man, it's you I want to see. Not the police. Remember that, won't you?
Don't be so gloomy. After all, it's not that awful.
But what the fella said, mentally, for 30 years under the Borgias, they had warfare, terror, murder, and bloodshed, but they produced Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and the Renaissance. In Switzerland, they had brotherly love. They had 500 years of democracy and peace, and what did that produce? The cuckoo clock. So long, Holly. Victims? The melody.
In actual fact, that little quote about Italy and the Borgias and Switzerland was filler. They didn't have quite enough time. They hadn't filled enough things, so they told Orson Welles to just come up with something. And so he remembered something like that from a previous play that he had seen, which is why he says, you'll remember the fellow said, because they couldn't actually source it. And he comes up with that quote, and after the film came out, he was swiftly corrected by Switzerland, which has never made a cuckoo clock. They're actually from the Black Forest in Germany, to straighten him out, but it was it's one of the best-known quotes from the film, and so is on that clip. It's been a bit of a comedy of errors this week coming up to this show. How many people watched The Thin Man? Okay. That's right. Okay, so on Wednesday, I did the review that I always do of the lectionary passages for next year's readings. I came up with a theme, drew a theme out of them called Insight, chose the readings and some quotes, sent them off to Annie, and she goes, oh, that's interesting. We are doing the movie this week, right? And I went, oh, completely forgot we were doing a movie. So anyway, that was okay. I'd watched The Thin Man the week before. And then I realized that the movie was supposed to be The Third Man, so I watched it on Friday. So some of you watched The Third Man, a couple of people watched The Third Man, a couple of people watched The Thin Man, so this is a bit of a, you know, I was sick last week, what can I say? So we're bringing together the theme from the lectionary passage from next year and the thin man and the third man. And when I saved my file, I wrote the thin turd man. So I'm never going to be able to find this perspective if I ever go back to my files to try to find it. So let's just run through what the thin man is and why I was scratching my head trying to figure out why on earth I had picked this film. We chose the films originally, a number of films that some people felt should have won the Best Picture film. And then I sent them all to Annie, and Annie ran through them to determine which ones were covered under the movie viewing license, so that we could show them here at the church the week leading up to the Sunday that we were speaking on them. And so we narrowed them down, and the ones that you have seen are ones that were available by that license. However, when it came up to the week, we had the indulgence series, we had the movie series, we had the book study, we had too many things, so we took the movies out, which is why we haven't been showing them, and I'm hoping that some of you are able to find them on YouTube or your public library or download them for $3.99 or something off the net. But The Thin Man, when I watched it, I was kind of still trying to figure out why this was one of the most profound films that someone felt needed to be, should have been an Academy Award winner, and indeed it was never supposed to be an Academy Award winner. It takes place in New York. A man who has been previously a detective has given up his work because he's married a socialite, played by Myrna Loy, and so they are going to spend Christmas in New York. It's just before the end of Prohibition, so guess what that means? Everybody's drinking. It's like a non-stop drink fest. The detective is constantly looking for another drink. At one point, Myrna Loy comes out with one of those classic ice bags tied to her head with a ribbon because she's had too much to drink the night before. And her husband, who's played by, what's his name, Powell? William Powell, yes. He is encouraged to take on this murder to find out who killed this man, Winant, who was an inventor and who supposedly was off to sell an invention and then mysteriously disappeared. And so there's all intrigue with, you know, previous a wife who has a relationship with a married man, and everyone's looking for $50,000. And it turns out that the thin man, who is the guy who was killed, was actually not the thin man who the sequels were all about later. They decided that Powell made such a great thin man that subsequent movies about him became known. And I think there were six successful movies that spun off from the incredible relationship between Powell and Loy, which developed on the site, or on the, what's it called? In the studio. And one of the things about that was that the director would tell them, just I'm not ready yet, just go over and do something. But he would actually film what was going on in those few moments and then use those pieces in the movie because they were so spontaneous and so natural. And often he also wouldn't tell Myrna Loy until she was about to go on what exactly the scene was about so that she would be crisp and fresh. And the banter that took place between them developed this sassy sort of relationship and included a little fox terrier who then went on to his own career in acting. And it was just a lovely fluff film. So I encourage you to enjoy watching it at some point in time. However, the third man, just before I leave the thin man, the whole spoof is up at a dinner. I mean, how many times have you watched movies where there's a dinner scene and all the guests are there and they unravel who the killer was and it's all exposed in that final scene of the movie? Apparently, it is a little convoluted, I must say. But Powell was so upset because it was so convoluted he couldn't figure out what he was supposed to be saying in that scene most of the time. And so he objected to the scene, but it does come through that the thin man was actually murdered, and they find out who actually did the murder at that dinner scene. So, whatever. Enjoy it. So the third man, which I watched on Friday and led to a whole other set of reading in relation to that, was a film that takes place in post-war Austria. And we have a couple of guys who are coming together in post-war Austria. What's his name? It's a funny name. Holly Martins has come to town, and his friend, Harry Lime, is supposed to pick him up and give him some kind of a job. Now, Harry and Holly haven't seen themselves since before the war, and it doesn't seem like they really did too much that wasn't a trouble. You know, like they seem to sort of run in this circle where they were kind of always getting into a little bit of trouble. And so after the war, when people were trying to figure out, you know, the new order of things, Austria was one of the places to be, because Austria had been divvied up after the war, as many of you will remember, because in 1938, Austria was the first place that was taken over by Germany. It was agreed in some of the conversations that took place amongst the Allies mid-war in 1943 that Austria would be seen as one of the first sorrows of the war, that their being taken over by Germany needed to be acknowledged. At the same time, they didn't want to let the Austrian people off the hook for being for colluding with the Germans during the war. And so this agreement to have the four Allied forces take over Austria and help to run Austria in a post-war Europe came into effect. So we had the British, the French, the Soviets, and the Americans, who all had a piece of Austria that they were responsible for. And some of this is important watching The Third Man to know this. I didn't know this when I watched it on Thursday afternoon. But the idea, I mean, I knew that there were Soviet people there who were engaging around the valley, the woman who is part of the film, around her passport, and there's conversations taking place between the Americans and the Russians. But knowing that there was this happening in Austria at the time in Vienna would have helped give me some insight into the film. Because the reality was that in Vienna and in Austria at that time, the situation was so dire that it was having an extremely difficult time making its way back after the war. The Soviets came in, dismantled almost all the significant machinery that they could get their hands on, and shipped it back to the east, stripping the country of about $500 million worth of equipment. Farms were in one area, and which wasn't controlled by some of the other allies, and so food getting to other areas was extremely limited. There were hunger riots and even a Jewish pogrom at one point that happened as a result of the many challenges that were being faced by Austria. So you have these two guys who are showing up in the city trying to find their own little get-rich schemes in a situation that is horrifically corrupt, where the officials of each of the different Allied forces are trying to figure out what they can do, while the people on the ground are trying to figure out how to make themselves a quick buck. And so the whole premise of the movie is that Harry Lime has been making money in a most egregious manner, which has led to some tragic realities that are intimated during one visit through a children's ward of a hospital. He had been stealing penicillin and then watering it down and reselling it back to those who were using it. And so that penicillin, of course, was not as effective as it needed to be, and incredible tragedies unfolded. So although that's the kind of thing that Harry Lime got into, Holly Martin didn't exactly shirk the desire to be present and help Harry out in whatever it was he was going to do. So he shows up and immediately finds out that Harry has been murdered. But that was a little bit of a spoiler, because he wasn't murdered. He was really in hiding and had actually murdered someone else who took his place in his coffin at the burial site. Not a very, very nice guy. But I really wanted to come at this, and somewhat briefly, because we're sort of late. I wanted to come at this. There was one quote that showed up that was really telling in terms of what the import of this film was. And the producer who makes the movie, Carol Reed, who ended up winning a Best Picture film for Oliver in 1968, and some people suggest that was a way to make up for the fact that this picture, which is considered one of the best pictures of all time, was not recognized and given Best Picture at the time that it was made in 1949, 1950. But Carol Reed uses these incredible angles in the film. Gets the cinematographer who did win in the Academy Awards to shoot things on an angle. And even as I was watching that little clip, it seemed like the camera was shifting angles so that Harry ends up, he kind of looks like he's moving with the Ferris wheel. Which is going around. And one of Reed's friends actually gave him a little level to put on his camera after the movie came out. Because he says, you know, all you have to do is hold the camera still, and everybody will be able to tell where the road is, right? Because Reed has the cinematography all over the place, and there's these huge shadows portrayed against the walls of post-war Vienna. Most of the scene takes place in, I think, what has ended up being a museum. But you can see how the sconces have been removed from the walls, and the outline of the old sconces with a new sconce hammered in place in front of it. It's fascinating looking at the architecture and the buildings and the still existent rubble which is around, even though much of it was filmed on set as well. Some of the big scenes take place in the sewer system where there's chases. And Orson Welles apparently complained so much about being in the Austrian sewer system that they went back and filmed them in the London sewer system. Not really sure why it's that much cleaner. But so they took place in there. But one of the interesting things, and it wasn't on the clip, was the music. Does anyone remember anything about the music? It's Anton Karas, who is playing a lute. And when Carol Reed was looking, they were trying to figure out where to shoot the film, and they were out scoping it out, and he was staying at the Zacher Hotel. Anyone know what that is famous for? Zacher Tort, yes, absolutely. And he was being shown around and ended up in this little bar someplace, and this guy was playing the lute. And he was so entranced by the music that he said, I need you to write the music for my movie. But this guy never actually wrote any music. He just played, right? He just played a zither. I'm sorry, it's not a lute, it's a zither. Just constantly played this zither. So he takes him back to London. The man is terribly homesick, wants to go home, and he goes, well, you can go home as soon as you write the music for the movie. So he has to write this music. He finally writes it, goes home, becomes an international sensation. Princess Margaret has him back, you know, has him play at all these great bars, and he becomes world-renowned, though the theme song is really this movie is really the only piece that he was really, really well known for. So I don't know why I went back and filled in all of that stuff. But the issue that I wanted to bring to the fore is the question about perspective and insight. When we watch a movie, we're often looking for ourselves. When we read a book, we're often looking for ourselves. We see ourselves in poetry and in art. Peter has a picture, a painting by my son Isaac, which he's going to put up so that you can take a look at it. I'm not sure if you can see that, but that's a roulette wheel. In the middle there, against a beautiful blue sky with clouds all over it, and a couple of dozen hands just on the page. Does anyone understand this painting? No, I didn't think so. The first time I saw it, Isaac had no idea what it was. He said, I don't know, I just keep painting, and eventually, you know, the painting tells me what it's about, right? And I'm like, really? So anyway, he posted this to Facebook, and I think his little comment on it was, if at first you don't succeed, because he kept at it until this apparently means something to him. I don't know what it means. I don't know what the Mona Lisa's smile means, right? We all look for ourselves in a painting, and there's no way that any of us could look at that and know what it meant to Isaac. We would only know what it meant to us, if anything at all. And that one's going to be a challenge. But anyway, I'll leave that with you. But when we watch a movie, when we read a book, I've been reading Le Guin's Left Hand of Darkness. Any of you read that book, science fiction? I read it because in the movie, it's mentioned in the movie, the Jane Eyre book club, the book club. Oh, I'm failing miserably. Anyway, Jane Austen book club. And the guy who's in the book club reads Ursula Le Guin and tries to get people to read Ursula Le Guin. So he says, have you ever read Left Hand of Darkness? And his argument is, look, if I'm going to read your books, you should read my book. So they read The Left Hand of Darkness. You look for yourself in a book when you're reading it. If you don't see yourself, or if it doesn't speak to you, or if there's not something that rubs a little bit of your personality edge, it doesn't mean anything to you. I am not going to finish The Left Hand of Darkness. It is so outside of my experience that it makes absolutely no sense to me. And generally, Scott will tell you, if I start a book, I finish a book. Like, I feel committed, right? So 300 pages in, I'm not giving up. I'm giving up. I can't get Ursula Le Guin at all. So I'll go back to Jane Austen and see what I can find there. But in these movies, it's the same thing. So one of the points that was so... it was one of the first things I wrote down when I started to read about this movie. And it said, in Britain, it's a thriller about friendship and betrayal. So in Britain, where it had huge acclaim, it was a movie about the friendship between Harry and Holly and the betrayal that Harry caused by not caring about the woman that he loved, who had come to mean something to Holly, about not caring about Holly, about simply disappearing and leaving Holly to try to figure out where it is, of the betrayal to the community that he was in. It's a story about friendship and betrayal. In Vienna, it received a very different response. It was not seen as a good movie at all. People didn't like it. They turned away from it and rejected it. It had a very bad response in Vienna. In Vienna, it's a tragedy about Austria's troubled relationship with its past. So it was made in Vienna about this friendship, this tragic friendship, and the irresponsibility and how it ends tragically. And it's a story in which we can all see ourselves. We've all been betrayed at some point in time. I mean, we've all tried to achieve things that maybe we wish we hadn't later on. We have compromised our friendships. We have come up short. We have not been where we said we were going to be, and we have been someplace else. So we see ourselves in that story. But in post-war Austria, where they were able to see on the film, they were able to see themselves with a modicum of shame because of their history within the war, their connections with Germany, their collusion with Germany, even though they were a country that had been invaded by Germany, annexed by it. They saw their own selves in that movie, and it was a reflection on the tragedy of their history. So this movie, I found it so interesting that two different audiences would see it so radically differently. But isn't that the way we watch movies? Don't we each see a movie in a very different way than the next person will see it? As we watch Reds, those of us who have some kind of are able to relate to the Bolshevik Revolution in some way or another will be cheering for the protagonist. And those who are concerned and worried because we know the history that happens, we know how it unfolds, and we're worried about that, may, you know, see ourselves aligning our perspective with someone else. As we go into this movie series this year and the six movies that we'll watch, let's be attentive to the perspective that we bring to it and be aware that the perspective that each of us individually brings will be as different on that movie as it may have been, although I think you all had a pretty much similar response to the painting. But what paintings, what poetry, what movies, what books, what stories, what captivates our heart is usually some way that we're trying to find ourselves in the picture. Some way we're trying to understand ourselves a little more fully. And we can read the same book over and over and over and over again with a different title and different characters and a different setting. But we can read that story over and over and over again until we're so tired of it, we decide we want to learn something else about ourselves. Or we can keep reading that story over and over again because we don't want to learn anything new about ourselves. So The Third Man versus The Thin Man, two very different films, and we see ourselves in them differently. But the ways that people in two different countries collectively viewed this film, I think, is enough to make it an important film. It came out as one of the greatest films of all time. Roger Ebert identified it as one of the greatest films of all time. Harry Lime is identified as one of the greatest villains of all time. Orson Welles, in his career, this was one of the significant villains that he was able to play. But I think that in any movie, and particularly in this one, there is much that can be said about who we as a people are and who we see ourselves to be, and how we can learn our way forward from whatever our contemporary stories are. This is a story that was contemporary to post-war Europe, and the tragedies that unfolded in Austria are not addressed in the movie, but they are there, and you can feel the people of Austria feeling those tragedies as the movie unfolded. So if you haven't had a chance to see it, enjoy it, and thank you for stumbling through this comedy of errors with me today. We live in a world where so many people live their lives out on social media, almost as an unfolding movie and the course of what happens in their day. And we could read stories about what people ate for all three meals and the in-between snacks. And we could read stories about people's lives unraveling because of illness and loss and grief. We can read whatever we want in social media these days. But we are whoever we are coming to those stories. And whatever it is that we see written there informs us in some way. Whether it's the simple everyday things that someone is experiencing or the traumas and tragedies and challenges of everyday life, our hearts respond based on the stories that have made us up to this point. So when you go from this place, I invite you to see every life as an unfolding story. Every opportunity that someone has to share their day with you as an opportunity for you to hear a little bit of how you can be in someone's life and how you are influenced and moved by that person. And find ways to engage beyond just reading what's on the computer screen or the page, but engage deeply in the relationships around you so that if someone were to ever write our story, it would be a story about real people doing real things in real time. And it would be a story about love. Go from this place in peace.
Life's made a center, Lord, all that is good. But all that we know is worthy. So we may nurture each other with the richness of truth. Restoring our souls for the journey to all that is worthy.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net. and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.